Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Hello, and welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 9, and the topic today is networks. As always, my name is Sujit DeMello. I'm a consultant with Microsoft, focused on the app dev space. And as always, I have my two esteemed colleagues, Kale Teeter and Evan Basilik, on Skype with me. Guys, why don't you introduce yourselves?
Hey, Sujit, this is Kale. Nice to be back. And I'm an MCS consultant as well in the app dev space in the New York, New Jersey region.
Yeah, and this is Evan, and I'm a senior support escalation engineer in Windows doing Azure support, and I survived the holidays, so I am back as well.
Great to have you guys back. Well, so, you know, I know what some of our listeners must be thinking. Networks. Wait a minute. I thought all my things are running up in the cloud. What's this thing about networks? Well, that's a common misconception about hosting stuff in the cloud. Just like you would host things in your own data center, there's networks involved with everything, and you need to think about them. So, Kale, why don't you give our listeners a brief introduction to some of our current service offerings as it relates to networks?
Sure. Thanks, Sujit. A couple things about what we have to offer. If you look at our basic offerings, we have the ability for you to set up different subnets and different networks up inside your data center in Windows Azure. So this allows you to basically partition space up there, much as you would when you're on-premise, in order to segment certain applications from others. We also have an offering of a VPN tunnel to allow you to connect to the Azure services from your on-premise network. So we're allowed to build that network between there so it connects seamlessly. You know, if you have a SQL Server database potentially that needs to talk to something up in Azure Data Center, we can do that with the VPN tunnel. And we have a couple different offerings. Evan, I think, is going to talk about them in a little bit, but we have a hardware and a software based, and we can talk about the details of that. These have the same SLA, so it's a 99.9% uptime, and it's a great way to carve up your space up there and set things up the way you would like to keep your services separated.
That's great, Kale. Now, does this mean there's a lot of configuration involved when doing all these things?
There is some configuration involved. We have two main entry points for configuration. The first is the management portal. So we have a simple GUI. It has like a wizard type interface, so you can just walk you through setting up your networks, and it'll go through the basics of you set up an IP range, you give it a name, you can say what kind of DNS it's going to use. We'll talk about the DNS here in a little bit, but we can set up a DNS up there so that we can these services can talk to each other by name. And on top of that, the other thing that we have is PowerShell commandlets. So just like everything else in Windows Azure, we have our service management API, and we have our PowerShell commandlets on top of that. So until recently, we could do a lot of things with our virtual networks, but the most recent thing that we've added has been the ACLs. So now we're able to actually put ACLs around, you know, things up in our virtual network. Before, we had the basic firewall. That was one of our first offerings, and we were able to say what IPs are allowed to talk to different things up there, and now we have a full-fledged ACL that we can use. On top of that, I mentioned IP and DNS, and you know, we get into a lot of things like, can I reserve IPs? Can I use static IPs? How does this work? Where's the DHCP server? And again, we'll talk about some of the details there, but in essence, when we set this up, it is by default using DHCP type IP address. So as you fire machines up, they're going to grab IPs. Now the nice thing about that is when you fire machines up, and if you keep them running, if you do not deallocate them per se, they'll always, even if you restart them or shut them down, they'll get the IP address back. And so that's a nice thing. So you don't have to deal with a lot of those mechanics that you had to over these years.
That's great. Thanks, Gail. So, you know, Evan, I'm just thinking, if you want to connect and do some of these connections between the Azure data center and the customer's data center, what are some of the hardware or software possibilities?
Yeah, so Jit, there's actually a number of different options, right? You have both hardware and software. So from a hardware perspective, we support site-to-site VPNs using a lot of the big manufacturers, you know, Cisco ASA, you know, like version 8.3 and higher, and Juniper. And one of the key things that this is kind of me, the support guy talking here, right, is we don't actually support those devices per se. We support hardware tunnels. That is a legitimate way. But we validated it with a number of, you know, common known devices, and using the script on that, we were able to get it to work. Now, it's a real collaboration between us, a customer, and their hardware vendor to get them to work sometimes, but we will definitely work with you guys to partner that up, or we work with customers. You can also do site-to-site using RAS for Windows 2012 server. Now, this is kind of the software-based site-to-site. Now, the big caveat here is that RAS uses what's called a dynamic tunnel versus a static tunnel that you can do with a lot of the hardware devices. Actually, most of the hardware devices can do both, but 2012 can only do dynamic, and the dynamic gateway is today still in preview. This is something we're working on really hard. It's intimately tied to point-to-site, which is the other way that you can do it, which is basically like if you've ever used, you know, a VPN client to get into your corporate network, you know, double-click an executable or go into the network configuration in Windows and, you know, connect up, put in your password and connect in. Point-to-site works just like that. So, again, key thing to take away from here is hardware, site-to-site hardware tunnels, number of devices validated, a fully supported configuration, RAS and point-to-site, they do work. And we have known people doing it, but they're in preview only, so we don't recommend to use them for production workloads. From the hardware perspective, talking about setting it up, super, super easy. We actually will even provide you with the script. You can then customize the script as you need to, and then, you know, go and run it in your environment. Typically, the VPN devices that do this, very inexpensive, you know, $400 to $500. All things being equal, that's a pretty cheap price to pay to be able to extend your corporate network to this infinitely scalable data center. Right. I mean, how much money does it cost to put a new server in your data center? A lot more than $400 or $500. One of the questions people ask a lot is, are these tunnels always active? Sort of, right? They're always able to be active, but if you don't have any traffic, then we're going to shut them down. And that's because we actually charge for them to be up. So we do that as a cost savings for you guys. Now, if you have an application that, you know, is always sending traffic, you know, a web server talking to SQL Server, you'll see the tunnel will stay up all the time. Now, if you have some application where maybe it only gets used during business hours, that gateway is going to spin down overnight to save you some money. You know, I was talking about, you know, 5 cents per connection hour. It's only $37 a month, right? It's pretty inexpensive. And you do pay once the connection starts. The other thing to take into consideration is that there is a data transfer cost, right? It's just like all the other egress stuff. Up to the first 5 gigabytes, it's free. After that, you know, there's a per gigabyte charge. So an interesting little technical factoid for the kind of the geeks out there like myself. We actually use Windows Azure PaaS instances to host the gateway, right? So these are just run-of-the-mill cloud service PaaS instances, and we deploy our gateway software on there, and we have two of them, an active and a passive, to make them highly available, and we deploy them and use them just like anybody else does. I was actually looking at some internal data, and we have our own Azure subscription that these are tied to. So we use our technology to produce these solutions just like you guys do as customers.
That's great. That's a nice tidbit there. Now, Evan, I'm just wondering, in terms of overhead, you know, establishing a VPN connection to the internet over here, what can we expect? Mm-hmm. You know, how much overhead does the VPN tunnel itself incur?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the VPN tunnel is basically an IPsec tunnel, right? So right. IPsec does, there is a little bit of a penalty. because you have to negotiate both the outer tunnel and the inner tunnel, you know. And so really, if you think about it from a speed level for your VPN devices, think WAN, right? It's going to be pretty reliable. I mean, the connections are pretty good, but you're really talking WAN rather than LAN type speeds at that point. So if you have a really chatty application, you're going to want to optimize what you're sending to accommodate that. And actually, we'll talk a little bit later about we do have some options coming to really – that will kind of blow that away from a performance perspective.
Fantastic. Thanks, Evan. Now, you know, Kale, I was just thinking about, you know, what are the hybrid possibilities of combining some of these options together? I believe that's something that you may know about.
Yeah, Sujeet, working with some of our customers, this is one of the big things that we use this this ability to set up this VPN tunnel for, is they wanted to keep some of their stuff on-premise, but still have some things running up in Windows Azure. One of the cases was actually ADFS. We were looking to use it for that. But there's a variety of different workloads you could use here. I mentioned SQL Server before. Pretty much anything when you provision services up in Windows Azure, if you need to connect to them via IP, this is your option. So it's a great way to extend your data center to the cloud. One thing we don't have right now is the VNet to VNet connectivity. So you can provision your gateway, but we can't have others, you know, two VNets like connected right now. It's just not something that's possible. But one thing that we do have that's really late breaking that just came on board recently was this partnership with AT&T. So if anyone is interested in MPLS to the cloud, it's a net bond. That's a relationship we have with AT&T where we basically partnered with them, and you can sign up for a subscription with them, which is much pricier than setting up the device like Evan was talking about. But you can get higher speeds with it, and so that's an option for people that are looking to get even more performance out of it.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, I heard about that AT&T partnership recently because that was something that was lacking in our offerings, and I'm glad we have it now. So look for that if that's something that interests you guys. Now, you know, we love having Evan on the show because he plays the support role within the Windows Azure team, and of course, he gets to hear all the common mistakes that customers make when setting up networks within their Azure environment. So, Evan, is there some common tidbits that you want to offer?
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to. And I'll cut customers a little bit of slack. Sometimes what I discover, the customers help me discover the mistakes that we make in our own products. So it definitely goes both ways. But some really key ones, right? And the first one, and this is the one that kills a lot of people, is, you know, they're trying to, you know, it's kind of a new thing to pay for these services as you go, right? We're all used to the old data center where, yeah, I spin up a server and, yeah, somebody's paying for the use of that or that spinning up of that server, but it's not me. It's not my department. So in this new pay-as-you-go world where we're paying for these virtual machines and these networks and all these resources as we go, people sometimes get really aggressive and say, hey, I don't need this server for a couple of days. I'm going to do a stop and deallocate on it. You know, they go into the portal and there's that option to do that. The thing you have to be careful of is if you stop and deallocate the last VM in a cloud service, we're going to deallocate the VIP as well, right? We are deallocating. We're releasing all the resources. If you have any sort of application that has a dependency on that cloud service, maintaining that VIP, then you need to make sure that you have something running inside that VIP. You know, there's a couple of ways you can do it. I mean, the first one is you just resize that cloud service down to an extra small and just leave it running. The other possibility that we see people do is they'll actually spin up a really, you know, an extra small VM and just, it could just be a dummy VM. That way they don't need to worry about their custom code running. But you just need to do that to maintain the VIP. Also, so we all love to go and tweak the network adapters in our on-premises machines, either, you know, setting static IP, setting, you know, DNS, all kinds of things. In the public cloud world, your VMs will move around all the time, you know, as we have hardware failures underneath or as we load balance, you know, any number of things. And, you know, whenever we do that, we reattach the NIC. Right at that point. So we rebuild the TCP stack. So all those settings will get reset. So like Kale was talking earlier, right, the trick is there's a place in the Windows in the Windows Azure portal to list out all your DNS servers, and we will go and programmatically apply those to each of the NICs as we attach them to the VM. Speaking of making NIC-level changes, please don't set a static IP. It may not brick right away, but you will eventually find out that you'll move, and you won't be able to RDP into your VM, and because these are stateful VMs, right? We can't undo that particular setting. A static IP will persist. And there is, at that point, you're basically sharing an IP with somebody else. We shut you down, and there is no way to recover that VM. You might be able to hack into the registry by attaching the disk to another VM, but that's pretty painful. So just don't do that. Again, like Kale was saying earlier, as long as you don't deallocate the VM, the DIP is preserved. So you really don't, we have basically infinite leases in essence. Another trick, talking about VNets, even if you don't think you need a VNet, create one, put your VMs in it. There's no downside to doing that. And the upside is that you now have a VNet, right? And once you have a VNet, you can carve it out, you know, into different subnets and the like. But once you have, a VM out deployed, you cannot move it in or out of a VNet. So better to put it in a VNet just in case you're going to need VM to VM communication. The other thing talking about VNets is, you know, you definitely always want to make your VNet a little bit bigger than you think. You might be one of these people that really likes to carve up your network into all these really tiny subnets, you know, each for its own little activity. Sounds great to do a /29. You know, you get maximum of 6 addresses until you realize that we allocate 2 for the active-passive gateway that we were talking about before, plus we actually have another one reserved for other purposes. So you're all of a sudden down to 3. 3 machines in a network is not a very big network. So there's really no extra cost to do larger VNets. So, you know, if you want it small, that's fine. Do a /26, do a /25. You still have, 5,000 or 8,000, VMs. That's usually plenty per subnet. But yeah, those are kind of the common ones. If you avoid those, you're definitely a lot less likely to have to talk to me one day.
That's great. Thanks for those gems, Evan. On the VNet side, there is no cost, right, to setting up a VNet? Is there an additional cost?
Nope. VNet is completely free to set up. That's one of the other reasons I say, Go ahead and make it. It's not going to hurt you.
Yeah. That's what I do. Awesome, thanks. Well, so we're at that part of the podcast where we normally give out some sort of updates and tidbits and links that might be of interest to our listeners. All these links will be in the show notes, of course. The first one goes like this. It's actually the Windows Azure website's book. It's a physical hard copy book that's been released by our very own Tejasvi Redkar, who's one of the worldwide leads for the Azure community within Microsoft. He's a very respected person, and that book is certainly something that would interest most people who are working with Windows Azure website, so please take a look at that. It is on. There's a link to the Amazon website where you can buy that book. The other one is we talked about using tables, Azure tables, in a previous episode, and there is a nice blog item that we found where somebody has actually built a production Azure environment with 154 million records in using Azure tables. And I thought, that's an amazing number. It really shows you the power of Azure tables. You guys should take a look at that link. And finally.
I was reading that the other day. He goes into some really good explanation. That's an excellent post.
Excellent. Thanks. And then finally, there's a new video that kind of gives you the high-level update on Windows Azure Service Bus. This is something we discussed in the last episode, and so if you want to follow up on that, it just gives you all the latest updates as it relates to Service Bus. So I guess that kind of brings us to the end of this particular episode on networks. Again, if you guys have any comments, questions, please use our Twitter handle, which is Azure Podcast. Otherwise, we'll thank Evan and Kale for all their contributions today. They did most of the talking, and I guess they're the experts in this particular area, so I really appreciate them chiming in. Guys, thanks again, and we'll see you next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Sujit.
Take care.
Yep. Thanks, Sujit.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.